Good morning, everybody. I'm Kimberly. I'm a compulsive overeater. And let's start with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. The topic of this workshop is steps 2 and 3. And it probably has a better topic than that. I'm glad to be here with you. I'm Kimberly, as I said, compulsive overeater, and I am here today with Bobby. She and I are the co-leaders for this meeting. Each of us will have up to 20 minutes to speak, and then we'll open the room for shares for 3 minutes. We have a volunteer. Kathy's going to volunteer for us. And when you come up to speak, she will let you know, just like she lets us know when time is up. So we are recording the session, and when you come up, you will see there's a recorder and a cell phone backup recording, and if you wish to remain anonymous, just use another name, okay? And with that, I will bring Bobby up.
Hi, I'm Bobby. I'm a food addict, and I am from Massachusetts. And I am very happy to be here today and to be part of this Came to Believe. So I came into program 23 years ago. I started March 8th of 2000, and I got a sponsor about 17 or 18 days later and have been abstinent from sugar and flour since that time. I lost 130 pounds in program. And it's not for me about the vanity, it really is the sanity. And I will start with that. So you've heard people say the first 3 steps are, I can't, you can, and I'm gonna let you. And so that's the short version. So for me, I was 260 pounds when I came in here. I'm 4'11" and a half. So I'm as wide as I was tall. It took me a while to really realize I was beaten down, but I came. So my first meeting, that's the background, the short story. I can give you quite the other story if you're interested. Seek me out. I came in, and I came in specifically for the steps. I had been in a different program, and they were talking about the steps, and I was pretty impressed with what these people were doing, being able to put boundaries around stuff and things like that. But I really wasn't getting it for me personally because I hadn't been raised in that sort of a family. So I came, somebody had broken their abstinence, not their abstinence, their anonymity. And so what I knew that these people sitting in that room were able to live life on life's terms and have these boundaries, and they could deal with some really pretty rough stuff. And so I thought, well, there's something here. And then I got to thinking, so one day I'm sitting in this meeting and I heard my higher power speak to me and say, you're treating sugar like other people treat a different substance. And I thought, you're right. So I thought, well, and I also felt that for me, I knew that if I could unlock the person, I didn't think I'd ever lose that weight. So number one, I want to put that out there. When you're that overweight, sometimes you're like, I'm just going to have to live to be fat, you know, or obese. But I want to be sane. I want to be well. I want to feel confident again. I want to be able to voice my opinion and be okay, not feel scared all the time. And so what I thought to myself is these steps are it. They're the door. They're the key that will unlock the girl that when she was 12 years old, sitting in a Sunday school class, told her Sunday school teacher that he was a hypocrite because he had been talking about people being not in heaven that were not of my faith. And I thought, that's not what we taught us before. I told him, you're a hypocrite. I'm not sitting here. I'm not listening to you anymore. I'm going to go home and tell my daddy. All right. I don't know why I had to put that part in there, but I did. And I did. I went home, and my father was incredibly supportive. He said, you've got what we want. You can don't have to go back there if you don't want to. And I also had confidence as a teenager that, you know, to stand up to people that were bullying people, to invite people that had no place to sit for lunch to sit with me. And But that got lost when my eating disorder went from my restricting to my compulsive overeating part. All of a sudden, all bets were off when my weight went up and up and up exponentially. I knew that I had I call mine God, my higher powers God. I actually like the great architect of the universe or the divine principle. But I knew I needed something to bank that flame, that internal flame, which is my soul, I think, back up. So I went to my first OA meeting, walked in there, heard people share that they did the same thing I did. I cried and cried, not because I was grieving over the idea of letting go of my food. I grieved, I was crying cathartically because these people get it and I have an answer. There is a solution. So, and I always used God before, like, but I had a teabag God. I'd only call on him when I was in hot water, you know? And that's what I used to do. Like, something happened, I'd be on, oh, please, God, get me out of this, you know? God did, usually, you know? There was usually some consequences there, but I never got into a lot of bad trouble. So I came in, I heard, I knew that I had a higher power, and I knew I was in the right place, and that was these steps were going to, step one, I'm powerless over food, and my life is unmanageable. I knew I found the lock, or the key that was going to unlock this person, the person that was squished down there, whose flame had been tamped out by her addiction. And I had never been so thrilled to hear I had a disease, that I had an illness. Never so happy in my life to be told that. So that was easy, step one. Step two was easy for me in the sense that my first meeting, I was eating, up to, I went to that meeting at 7 o'clock in Waltham, Mass. Tons of people were in the meeting, you know, and I go in there, and I'm eating. I sat there for an hour. I listened to the people. I heard them talking about getting down on their knees and stuff. And I thought, what the hell do I have to lose? You know, not knowing I would have lost 130 pounds and gained my sanity. But all right, what do I have to lose? I went home that same night, got on my knees and said, please, God, take away this compulsion of mine to eat sugar. My food plan's no sugar, no flour. I didn't get the flour part yet, but please, God, take away this compulsion of mine to eat sugar. And believe it or not, it was lifted that night. I have not had sugar in my body since March 9th of 2000. So that's a long time for somebody that was eating sugar. I only ate that. That's the only products there was no need to eat real food. Why would you eat real food? You know, I'm the person who would think I'm going to go on a diet and then, you know, all my vegetables had to throw them out, or I'd never, you know, I didn't eat real food. Let's just put it that way. So I knew then, wowee, there's something bigger than me. Something has relieved me of this compulsion for me to shove this stuff. I couldn't believe it, you know, and then I went along with that. And I was starting to get more sane. I was no longer raging at people. I wasn't screaming. I still was very nervous around food and sugar products. I couldn't really be around them at the time. I lost my mother 3 months after I was in program, and I didn't eat over it. What? That's something bigger than me. So I knew my father was 6 months after that. I didn't eat over it. I'd had relationships that didn't work out the way I had thought they were going to work out. I didn't eat over it, you know, so those kind of things. But the big thing was my mom and dad passing, the fact that I didn't eat over there. So I knew that something was helping me. And I knew that that was bigger than me, because left to my own devices, that would have been great for a dramatic story, maybe a mini series, you know. Woe is me, you know. Let's tell everybody in the whole world. That's the other thing I noticed. I was no longer racing around places spreading stories, you know. I used to want to know everything that was going on, you know. Ooh, the juicier the better, you know. I'm not saying I'm not perfect now. I mean, I still have my moments, but at least now I know not to spread them, you know. But anyways, so I knew that there was something now working, and that it was these steps, and the answer was there. So I had a sponsor that got me into a close study of the 12 steps immediately, which I believe also helped me to stay abstinent through the deaths of my parents, because I was surrounded by program and people who thought like me and people who were supportive. And I had people to call. You know, we talked about the tools yesterday, some workshop did, and I used those religiously at the time. So I did many close studies of the 12 steps. And then all of a sudden, about 2000, it had to be 2002, I think is what it was. I was in a close study of the 12 steps, and something during this thing that we were talking about, and I think it was when we were doing step three, I don't remember when, but one day I'm sitting in there, and I felt a shift deep in my soul, deep in that area, like I'm telling you, where the flame is banked or pushed down, smothered or fed, you know? And so I felt this like weird thing. Oh, and I should backtrack. Before that, I thought I was doing step three, turn my life and will over to God, before that. So I'd say I'm gonna do that, but I had the, you know, on clothing, or I think fishing line, there's like a monofilament, like that little, you can't really see it there. It's like a see-through thread, piece of plasticky thing. Well, that's what I would have. So I would turn, okay, after my first three steps, you know, God, I'm turning my life and will over to you today. Woo-hoo. And then, thank you. And then I'd be like, and taking it back, you know, wheeling that fishing rod back in, yanking it back. And I did that all the time. But I would have told you, I'm turning my life and will over to God. I am. But I really, really wasn't trusting and relying that God or my higher power, the divine principle, was really going to be there for me no matter what. I was still wanting to be Bobby's control, you know, as opposed to God's control. And so I really, so during this close study, something inside me shifted. It sounds weird. I don't know how to explain it other than that. Something shifted. And all of a sudden, I'm like, ooh, I'm going to be okay. And I all of a sudden pictured one day when I did my third step prayer, you know, I sat there and I envisioned these hands reaching out to me. And I envisioned me putting myself in there and literally with scissors cutting that monofilament. And since then, I have turned my life and my will every single day over to God. I am no longer in charge. And like I said, it wasn't about the food because I was abstinent. It was other things. I still wanted to control other things. I wanted to control people, places, and things. And I stopped worrying about that. And when I start to feel that, I remind myself now, you're not in charge, Bobby. Nobody's made you. Nobody made a decree that made you the higher power. You are not. So I went through many things, and here's some of the things that I have done since my higher power. Oh, here's another funny story. So I was working as a teaching assistant, I had a boss that was like, you should go to grad school and get your degree in special ed because you're really good with these kids and you should be in front of the classroom, not as a teaching assistant. And so I'm like, all right. So I looked into a couple of schools in my area, or one school, it was Lesley University I thought of going to. And then I kept dragging my feet for some reason to apply. And one day I was standing in the teacher's room getting my mail, and there was this English teacher with me. Now, he and I never, ever, ever talked about the big G word. I don't usually use that at work unless I'm saying, oh, for God's sakes, don't do that or something, you know. And we were standing there, and I was just reaching for my mail in my mailbox, and I said to him, you know, Scott, I don't know why I'm still dragging my feet on this, you know, applying for thing. And he said, well, I don't know. And I looked, and here from Simmons College was this thing from this collaborative that was going to underwrite part of it from this school. And I looked at it, and I started, and he said to me, well, maybe that's because that's where you're supposed to go. And I was like, holy mackerel, maybe you're right. And sure enough, that's ended up where I went. So there's another sign that God was there. My life my trajectory of my life completely changed then. I was able to fulfill this dream that I always had, that I wanted since I was 9 years old, to be a teacher, you know. And I went, graduated, so that was an example. And then when I graduated, I was looking for, I got a little bit confused with my, anyways, I'm not going to go into some stupid thing we have to send off to the Department of Ed. I thought my college was doing it. I had applied, didn't realize it. Anyways, so I was looking for a job, and I just kept praying and praying. I'm going to find something. And I thought, I'm just going to turn it over to God. God's going to take care of it. He's got a plan. Sure enough, I got to work at a really incredible school system that year for a short time, but not as the lead not as a regular teacher, you know. And I did that. And then I was looking for a job, got another job. And then I got laid off from that job. Again, trust that it will work out. Had to do retail, had to do whatever I had to do to make money. And then I found another job at a residential school. God, again, put me in the right place. And because of that, God put me in this place. I went there and I ended up being the science teacher, which helped me to do the job I have now. So, you know, this is how God has helped me. I just trust and rely all the time. I turn my life and will over to Him. Another example of how God takes care of me, if I stay out of the way. I had a detached retina this summer, and my optometrist tells me about it, and I had to go see a specialist. Now, the before Bobby, first of all, the before Bobby program, really before Bobby, before program, BOA, I would have been thinking I needed to eat, or shop, whatever, eat, mostly eat. I would have ran right down to the pastry store, which is across the street from my optometrist. But instead, thank you, I walked up, you know, I went there, and he had already called. I was going to see my specialist, and as I was walking, I'm not going to lie that I wasn't scared, because I couldn't see out of my eye. And the idea of being blind, what am I going to do? How am I going to teach? But I didn't, those were a moment. I stopped as I walked and I said the serenity prayer. I did the third step prayer and I said, God, please take away, I'm not going to be fearful. You will take care of this. I know this. So take away my fear. Trust, what would this look like if I trust and rely on my higher power? And it was lifted, went up, got in the thing, drove over with my eye like this so I could get there, you know, went to the, I mean, luckily it was only across town, had an incredible, incredible surgeon. He's amazing. And so I went there, and while I was there, the people coming in to look at me, because it's a teaching place also, they're like, boy, you're awful chill for somebody who's going through this. Like, you really are, like, so calm. I said, well, I have to trust and rely on my higher power. You know, I can't worry about it. And they were like, oh, that's cool. I said, yeah. I said, you know, it is what, yeah, what am I going to do? And everything was perfect. I'm fine. You know, unfortunately not to go get cataracts fixed, but at least that's not a big deal. So those are some examples of what has happened to me. I have many, many examples of how I just get out of the way. If I get out of the way, and I do my third step prayer all the time, and I kind of pause when I'm doing my prayers. I even do it with my, when I do the serenity prayer, I pause. And sometimes, like when I do the serenity prayer, I kind of think about people, places, and things that I need to accept, you know, that I can't change them, because I still would like to, believe you me. The director is still here underneath, but I have a bigger director now, and that's more powerful. And then let's see what else. I'm trying to think if there was any other. Way back. This is a funny example, too, of trusting and relying. I needed to make extra money. If anybody here has ever been a teaching assistant, you don't make a lot of money. So I am thinking, and I worked for a district that paid us really well, but I needed to make extra money. So I got on my knees one day and I said, all right, God, I need to make extra money. So either I go to work for Target, or, you know, maybe I could do, or I tutor. I don't know, God, but it's, you tell me. The very next day, I went into work, and somebody says to me, my kid needs a tutor. Could you come and help me? There you go. There was extra money right away. And after that, I had other people calling me. I was making like $300-$400 extra, you know, whatever. I was making extra money for these tutoring jobs. Oh, and the school hires you to send up. And there was kids, unfortunately, that had been through surgeries or weren't coming to school that I had to go and tutor. But I tutored, like, and I house sat, and I, you know, all of a sudden, all these incredible opportunities were coming because I got out of the way, and I trusted and relied. You know, I believe if you put out positive, positive comes back. So I think I'm probably almost done, so I'm going to finish up. It's just that if you can't remember to say those prayers, then just repeat to yourself, I can't, you can, and I'm going to let you. And really, if you need a visual, think about that. Think about putting yourself, however you want to think of it, in these hands or in a house or in a beautiful place, and think about like chopping that monofilament, that little thing that gets in the way, and kind of like abandon yourself. You know, I abandoned myself to eating like a crazy woman. Why would I not abandon myself to something positive? So I'm going to just say the key was unlocked. I have an amazing, amazing life today. I have amazing friends. I have civilian friends. I have my peeps here. And so thank you very much for letting me share.
Wow. Thank you, Bobby. So I'm Kimberly. I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody. I know so many of you, and I look forward to getting to know the rest of you. I have been in OA for 37 and a half years. On September 6th, I celebrated 37 years of abstinence. Thank you, God. And I'm maintaining a 65-ish pound weight loss. You know, in my head, I want to get to a number and stay on it. But I really would have to hone my obsession more to do that. So I 60, 65 pounds, 67. Anyway, I came to OA when I lived in Paris, France, believe it or not. They had OA there 37 and a half years ago. They're celebrating their 40th anniversary this weekend, by the way. So happy anniversary, France. So to get abstinent in Paris is a miracle. And I got abstinent in Paris, and believe me, I did my fair share of eating in the land of the skinny ass people. So, and if that's not enough that I got abstinent in Paris, that miracle, the bigger miracle is that the vast majority of the time, I no longer fight the compulsion to eat things that hurt me. I have a real clear view of what my alcoholic foods are, for lack of a better word, and my crack cocaine foods. I have a real clear idea of what my alcoholic eating behaviors are. I was a grazer. I ate, snacked all day long. Because if you didn't see me eat one fill in the blank at a time, you wouldn't know the whole plate was empty, right? And I just have been given, thanks to this program, the 12 steps, a neutrality with food and a sanity that doesn't tell me I can get away with something if nobody's looking. And then more than that, as if there could be more than that, I mean, that would be enough, right? I have been able to face calamity with, at the very worst, abstinence, and some calamities with serenity, or abstinence that led me back to serenity. The loss of my parents. My father was in a persistent vegetative state for 3.5 years. That's a tragedy, right? And wasn't serene the first few nights, but I could get to that place. And I was traveling, after my mother died, I was traveling with my stepfather, and he died while we were traveling in his hotel room. And this, I experienced profound grief, which I think is what is natural, right? That if I turn my will and my life over to God in this situation, God would probably say, grieve, you knucklehead, right? Don't stuff the feelings. And abstinence and OA in the second and third and 11th step gave me the path through. So I will say that when I came to OA, I did not intend to stay. My plan was to go to the meetings, follow the food plan that I had been given, and do the assignments and lose some serious weight. And then when I lost some serious weight, I planned to leave because you people were crazy, those people were crazy. And when I did, I would just magically eat a little bit now and then and not gain any weight back, as if magic had ever worked. I didn't really believe I was like the alcoholics in the big book in the beginning. One day I realized I was Jim, but I went from not believing any of it to knowing which alcoholic I was, foodaholic I was. But I did know I was fat, right? I lived in Paris. I don't know how many millions of people there, but, you know, think New York City, think Boston, think big city. And I was obsessed with my obesity, and I would look in the metro to see if there were other fat people, and there were not. So the thing that got me is there were people in the OA meetings who knew about stretch marks and inner thigh chafing, so clearly they had been obese, because I didn't know other people had inner thigh chafing. And so these people who had been fat and out of control with food were no longer. And so I noticed that they weren't crazy. Well, I thought they were crazy, but they weren't food crazy. And then that gave me, so that was my early first step, that you know, they're not eating that way. Maybe I could not eat that way, even for a little while. And then I got hope. And there was something different happening there that gave me vague hope. And that was my first early second step. And then my first early third step was simply doing what they told me to do, even though I didn't believe it. Somebody said, call so-and-so. They're a great food sponsor. Never mind anonymity, but right? So I called so-and-so. And then so-and-so, the food sponsor, said, okay, you need a step sponsor. And I asked one of the other Americans in Paris who would be leaving. She was a student, and then I asked her to sponsor me because she would be leaving at the end of the school year. And by then, I would have outgrown the need for a sponsor. Did I mention I wasn't particularly humble? Anyway, my food sponsor said, eat 3 meals a day, nothing in between, no sugar one day at a time. And I did that. And that was me. I didn't know it. I turned my will and my life over to my food sponsor. I did the 3001. My step sponsor said, read this in the big book. Read this in, it was a long time ago. We didn't have our OA 12 and 12. Read this in the AA 12 and 12. I did what she told. I turned my will and my life over to the person who said, call so-and-so, and to so-and-so and the other so-and-so. And that was my beginning to the third step. And then just one more quick story about how steps 2 and 3 came to mean so much more. And that was one night, one afternoon actually, I was leaving the meeting. I was walking back to the subway with the old timer. And I didn't know it then, but she was actually one of the two women who brought OA to Paris. So she really was the old timer. And she showed me her before picture. Now, up until then, I knew in meetings she shared she'd lost over 100 pounds, but she showed me her before picture. And I can't tell the story without looking at her before picture. And I looked at this picture, and I could not believe that that was the same woman who was standing next to me. That looked like it was probably her great aunt or something, you know? And I was overcome. I didn't know it was called hope, but what hit me was, if that is possible, maybe something good could happen for me here. Maybe there's something here for me. And that's when the shift changed. So working with my sponsor, I didn't really believe in the whole insanity thing, but working with my sponsor, I realized that eating because I hated being fat was not really rational, right? It's kind of insanity. Maybe not lock you up insanity, but I ate it because I hated being fat. I was a primo sneak eater. And you know, like if nobody saw me eating, they wouldn't know I was fat. Or, and I know I have good company here, get a plate of anything. It could be sweets, it could be deviled eggs, it could be pickles. Eat one, eat two, eat three, rearrange it a little bit. So eat four, eat five, eat six, rearrange it. Like somebody coming in who made a plate of a dozen, let's say deviled eggs, right? Because it's, and they come back and there's six, and I'm the only one there. They're not going to know that. So that was my insanity. And it was really obvious to me that other people in OA had been that crazy. My favorite one was when I was a kid, my mom would buy cartons of ice cream, and I would turn them over, open it from the bottom, and eat from the bottom. So now that I'm adult, I'm pretty sure that my parents could pick up a half gallon of ice cream unopened and think, what the hell? I told my mother this story one time, and she said, oh my God, I blamed your father for that. My poor dad. Anyway, so that was my real step two. My deeper step three was a little slower. I had several problems with step three. First of all, I had no conception of God. I didn't believe in God. I didn't not believe in God. I didn't disbelieve in God. I just didn't think much about God. So second, I really wasn't sure what this will and life stuff was all about. It sounded, it sounded a little bit like jargon. I didn't trust it. So I talked to my sponsor about it. Oh, I'll tell you, though, my real problem was it. So in the 70s, my father was a mover and shaker in the self-actualization movement, for those of you who remember those days. And there was a slogan that they had was to think is to create. And I was raised on to think and to create. And if I wasn't creating thinness, I wasn't thinking the right thoughts. I wasn't trying hard enough. So, you know, turning my will and my life over, I, you know, been that, done that, and, you know, had the bumper sticker literally, and that didn't work. So my sponsor took me aside and spent some time with me, and she explained that my will is what I want, what I think, what I feel. And my life was what happened to me, what I did, my thoughts, my will, what I did, my life. And so a couple of examples. If I wanted to go to the movie with the other kids, I was 27, I think, probably at this time, 28. I wanted to go someplace with the kids in Paris. And so at this age, I think they're kids. But anyway, so that's my will. I want to go. I'm afraid they'll say no or they'll ditch me. That fear, that's my will. If I ask them if I could come, that's my life. And if they laughed at me, that's my life. So who am I turning my will and my life over to? I'm not turning it over to the kids. Some of them who are very nice and some of them who are, you know, don't want to hang out with the fat girl. What if I turn my will and my life over to OA or to God that I had no conception of? What would that look like? Well, I could say, okay, OA, or okay, God, if you're there, should I ask, shouldn't I ask? And could you help it be okay, right? And could you make them say yes? Now that's my will. Could you help me be okay with whatever happens? That sounded like I was turning my will and my life over to these weird OA people. So doing this a lot, I had another example, but I want to be aware of time. Help me understand that when I turn my will and my life over to OA, the ideas in OA, to whatever God was, whatever happened ended up feeling better then if the same thing happened and I had let the other kids or my very dysfunctional boyfriend at the time, if I had let them be the deciding factor, if I turned my will and my life over to them. So my sponsor also asked me how it was working. You know, every time I turned my will and my life over to, you know, jerko people, was I happy? Was I serene? No. What did I do? Well, what do you do when you're a food addict and you're not happy and you're serene? You know, I prowled through the cupboards. If I could get out of the apartment, I, you know, went to the shortest, closest place. And so she said, so how is that working for you? I said, I don't know. I can't buy clothes in Paris. I guess it's not working too good, you know. And she told me that I could choose whether I turn my will and my life over to earthlings or if I turn my will and my life over to God. And if not to God, could I turn my will and life over to OA? And she said it was my choice and I had to make a decision. And so I decided that I would continue to come to meetings and do what she told me to do and try to turn my will and my life over to her. So that was the good news. The bad news is that making a decision is not taking an action. And there's a great story I heard about this, and you've probably all heard this. I heard it first time at the 1987 World Service Convention in Boston. And it was a third step meeting, and the speaker said, if you have five frogs on a log and one of them decides to jump, how many are left? So obviously it was a trick question, right? It wasn't a math exercise, five minus one. So I said zero, and I'm like, you know, imagine me 20, however many years ago that was, right? Zero, and she said, nope, if you have five frogs on a log and one of them decides to jump, there are five frogs on the log. Till you take the action, the decision is meaningless. And that a decision without action means nothing. It's not even a step forward. So I really struggled to figure out what step three was telling me to do. I had to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. My sponsor told me to read step three in the AA 12 and 12 over and over again. And that was many years before we had our own 12 and 12. So I did. And in the last few pages, I found something that really rocked my world. And I'm going to see if I can read just a paragraph to you. So it says, you know, how can I turn my will and my life over? So there are certain things which only the individual can do. All by himself, in the light of his own circumstances, he needs to develop the quality of willingness. Rocked my world. When he acquires willingness, he is the only one who can make the decision to exert himself. Trying to do this is an act of his own will. All of the 12 steps required sustained and personal exertion to conform to their principles, and so we try, and so we trust to God's will. It is when we try to make our will conform with God's will that we begin to use it rightly. And it goes on from there, but I want to not spend too much time there. But that blew my mind. I was not abdicated from trying, right? I was not abdicated from having some responsibility. You know, I couldn't, to go into the bakery, eat something, and then say, God, help me, was, you know, that was not God's failure. And that willingness, if I didn't want to do something, I could be willing to do it. I didn't really want to write a fourth step. That scared the heck out of me. But you know what? I was willing to write on the first question that my sponsor gave me. I didn't want to fill in the blank, do an assignment, do a task at work, try to be honest, buy vegetables. But I was willing to do it once. And willing to leads to want to, and leads to recovery. And that should be a whole nother workshop here. So as a result of the willingness that came out of the second and third step, and willingness is a principle later on, but it really, the seeds of willingness are right there in step two and three, have given me just a wonderful life. Really, as of last night, beyond my wildest dreams, I got to be on the stage without my favorite pop star. So if you missed that, it was, in a room of people who really love me. And so I want to close with just some of the promises on what I call the step three promises out of the OA 12 and 12. And for the second step, it said, we felt the relief of not having to face our problems alone. What a gift that was. When I began to act as if a power existed, good things happen. And I will say, just like willingness leads to wanting to, acting as if leads to feeling and believing. Acting as if has just been another one of the cornerstones of my practical recovery. And continuing to take the actions and OA steps allows me to remain abstinent and sanely through good times and bad times. And I have tell you, I was able to live abstinently through some crap. And then one of my favorite promises in the OA 12 and 12 on step three, and this is a good place to close. Once we truly take the third step, we cannot fail to recover. Thank you. Okay, so read before opening the meeting to 3 minute shares. The workshop will end at, what time are we ending at?
10:15.
No,
10
o'clock.
Oh, 10 o'clock.
Thank you, Bobby. I like the idea of the extra time. Bobby and I will be here talking to ourselves.
Yeah.
No, so we'll end at 10:15, and for the rest of the...
10.
10.
10.
Yeah, I
want
to...
When we walk out,
Kimberly,
you'll know.
Okay. When you say the serenity prayer, I'll know, yeah. The workshop will end at 10. This is all recorded. Isn't that great? At 10 o'clock, and until 10 o'clock... or 9:59, we'll have 3 minute pitches from the floor, and the timer will let you know, so she'll wave at you, and please, when you come up, note that we are recording, and your session, speaking here, is you are giving your permission for us to share the recordings in our podcast feed. So if you're concerned about that, feel free to use a fictitious name, and we will respond when we say hi, if we say hi, or with your fictitious name, okay, whatever name you give us. Please say where you're from, how long you've been in OA, and then devote your share to your experience on steps 2 and 3. We have 2 devices up here recording. Don't worry about them, right? So who would like to start us out? Come on up, Christina. And if you want to, folks, you can start a line on the wall or just come on up.
Morning. What a beautiful way to start the day. My name is Christina, and I'm a grateful compulsive eater. And 42 years and 5 months ago, I came to an OA meeting because I was at the end of my rope, and it was... you know, I might as well try that thing, never left. And so grateful to be here, because it's helped me to have hope to live a life well, even when the days are not good. Some of my best days I've lived here, and some of the hardest. So step 2 and 3, honesty, hope, and faith, those are the principles behind the first 3 steps. So how do you get faith? You know, I thought I had faith because I had gone to religious schools and knew what the rules and the prayers were. But, you know, there's something mysterious and life-giving about coming to our program, because you get to have a relationship with the power greater than yourself. In the beginning, it was the power of the group. they were special. And I didn't talk to anybody about OA for a while because I didn't want to criticize. But I could see that something happened for you. And, you know, it's that idea of developing a spiritual relationship, you know, is still part of the trust walk for me. I remember saying to a girl who was very religious one day, I'm having a step three problem. She said, sweetheart, when I have a step three problem, I really have a step two problem. Do I believe that there's a higher power? And do I believe he's smart enough to help me? And, you know, I'm not a courageous person, but the prayer that we do helps me to be softer and stronger as I try to go forward and not shake in my boots too much. And helps me to have the courage to live and be kind to people in peace and happiness. So I think the last thing I wanted to say is I have a friend who started the same night as me. And I called her up one day and I said, you know, I've been in 25 years and I'm shaking like a leaf. And she said to me, just because you're scared doesn't mean you don't have a spiritual connection and that it's not working. So, you know, keep trudging, because what I say to myself, when those plot twists happen, you have the car accident or the kid is on your last nerve. Okay, God, help me to see the truth today. And you knew about this too. So, you know, let's go. All right, thanks for listening.
Good morning, family. My name is Kathy, and I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Thank you both for sharing. Bonnie, I remember you years ago at the assembly. What an experience. And Kimberly, chairman of Region 6, Region 6 chairman. Okay. So this is my third time into the program, my first time working it. I came into the program in the 90s. And in the 90s, we didn't have printers, so I got a copy of something that said no sugar or flour, and I go, this is stupid. So I left, because I didn't have a problem with food. I wanted to eat sugar. Came back in the early 2000s, and I got all the reading, all the literature. He's going to all the meetings, and 5 months later, didn't work the program, and I left. So January 14th of 2014, I came in here because I was going to an event and I wanted to lose weight. So when people say, and if I could be the poster child for, like, if you think you can't do it, it's just incredible, because my sponsor told me, you must call 3 people a day. And I called 3 people that worked during the day. And I said, I looked and I said, well, this one I know works 9 to 5, and this one I know. And I would go back to my sponsor and I would say, I called 3 people. And she said, how are you supposed to talk to 3 people? Okay, so what did I know? A story, my daughter and I, we were the only ones in the house. She was baking for the school the next day. And later at the night, I took some cupcakes. And she woke up. Mom, what did you do? What? I didn't do anything. I denied taking the cupcakes when I was the only one in the house. So it was just like this sick thinking. So when they say act as if, oh, what a stupid thing to say, like act as if. But if I could tell you, when you work this program, it is so amazing, because I used to eat if you had a headache. So I would eat, oh, one of my pain weight. I ate when I was emotional. Yeah, emotion. I ate anytime. I ate while I was eating, while I was shopping, while I woke up. But it was just the only thing I knew. It was the only thing I knew, so we know what we know. And, I had a God. I didn't not, but I had a God in my church once a week. And this program has brought me closer to, you know, God brought me here, and we are all here because we're supposed to be. Like, where am I going to go? There's 6 options. They give me too many options. I walk into this room. I mean, this is where I'm supposed to be. I mean, if you could just listen, be open-minded, and trust. And I'm out of time, and I'm just beginning. Tomorrow morning,
thank you.
Steph, and tonight, don't forget, dancing and square dancing. You're going to be so happy.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jen O, compulsive overeater. I'm from Valley Cottage, New York. And I've been in program 8.5 years, going on 9. Higher powers lifted between 100 and 110 pounds. I'm exactly where I needed to be, too. And hearing the two of you was such a blessing. I think when I first realized there was something else was when I came to my, I think it was like my second meeting, and God lifted my addiction to sugar. I mean, if that's not a miracle, I don't know what else is a miracle. And in the beginning, like, that was it. That's all that I could do. I came to meetings, I cried. I was so inspired just by people who were happy, and they used to say they're back-to-back apps. I just couldn't understand how that was possible, from going up and down and up and down. And I stayed in the meetings, and that, you know, I still was eating other things, but that, the sugar, and then I gave up sugar. Like, shouldn't all the weight fall off? Like, that, isn't that enough, God? Like, isn't that enough? Like, sugar. But it wasn't enough. And then I remember being in a meeting, and it was like, all of a sudden, I was just willing to do whatever it took. It just struck me. And then I found a step sponsor, and then I went to a nutritionist, and when she told me I had to eat 3 meals and a snack and weigh and measure, and when I started, and then she wanted me to eat like a grain at each meal, and I started panicking. I was like, no, I don't eat grains. Like, I thought I would gain weight, but the opposite happened. And it's like when I started weighing and measuring and I realized what a serving was, I was horrified, and, you know, I was like, this is it. But it was enough. It was enough. And it was more than, I heard something that said enough is a feast. And I, at that time, like, I had that willingness. Like, I remember turning it over, and then I did start turning everything over, and I was happy. I used to go to bed, wake up thinking I was a piece of crap, and going to bed thinking I was a piece of crap. Even though I was like, say, 50, 60 pounds heavier than I am now, I loved myself. I started to like myself. I started buying clothes, making myself feel good and in the moment, and I felt good about honoring my commitments, and I was filled up with love and joy. And, you know, I have to say, though, I've been struggling this past year, like almost like a spiritual relapse, playing with food, thinking I got it. I don't have it, you know. And so I've never gone to, like, you know, sugar or flour again. But being sloppy and not having that serenity, I'm not trusting, I think, in situations like traveling and stuff, my HP. So anyway, I'm just very grateful to be here. Thanks.
Thank you. Speaking to you, I'm Stella, and I'm a compulsive overeater recovering.
Hi.
I have a big smile on my face from just being here. I can't, you can, I think I'll let you. I love hearing that today. That was one of the gems I'm going to take away from this meeting, that's for sure, because I often say I can't. God can, God will, or whatever, for the first 3 steps. But I have a little different take on it today, and that's always helpful to me. I came into this workshop because I questioned my strength in step 3. I'm told, and I was instructed and did take step 3 when I did the steps, or have done the steps several times. But it occurred to me many years ago that I have to take step 3 every day, really. You have to remind myself, oh, yeah, I'm not in charge. Okay, God, you can, you know, help me. And this morning, as a result of maybe the last 2 weeks, I've been anxious about coming here because I got lost in White Plains 30-some-odd years ago, and it was horrible, horrible feeling of powerlessness. Well, today, and I even came here 2 weeks ago with my husband in the passenger seat. so that I could check out the directions. And it made it worse because I was scared about some left-hand turns. Today, I got into the car, I pushed Waze, and I thought I was going to go the same way. And I started driving, and Waze had me going a different way. And I didn't feel nervous or anything. And do you know, there were none of those turns that I was so worried about all these 2 weeks. None of that happened. I'm here. I'm delighted to be here. And then my last thing I want to say is I just reuse all the time. Breathe in faith, exhale fear. That helps me so much. Thanks, everybody.
Good morning. I'm Martha, compulsive overeater, relapse survivor, living in a state of grace today. And thank you both. That was fabulous. This is a topic I never get tired of. This is for me, was the turning point and allowed me to move forward. Without step two and three, I'm stuck. It doesn't matter how miserable I am or how powerless I admit, nothing will happen if I didn't start to have faith. I came in as an agnostic, and I thought, well, if you need spirituality, good for you. Go ahead. I'm fine, thanks. And but I picked a sponsor not because of her physical recovery or anything she actually said. It was in 1 week I picked her, but because her eyes sparkled and she oozed spirituality out of her pores. And I thought, that's what I need, because I'm not going to get this easily. And her suggestion was to start talking to God. Okay. And so I did. Every day I talked to God. There was nothing there. I was holding the tin can, you know, that string that goes, and there's another tin can. Well, that tin can was out of sight and on the floor somewhere. But I kept talking, and I kept talking. And eventually, it felt like something picked the can up. One day, I was just talking, and it wasn't on the ground anymore. I still couldn't see it, but it wasn't on the ground. So things began to change. And then I thought, okay, turn my will and my life over. Oh, my gosh, I don't even know what God is. I'm trying to define God. Put it in a box, put a ribbon on it, understand it, wrap my head around it, because I was a very logical, reasonable person, even though I believed me every time I told myself to eat, that would make sense, right? So I had proof that it didn't work my way, but I really was having a hard time at the thought of letting go. And I struggled with that definition of God until I woke up one day and thought, I have no idea how a fax machine works. Of course, this is now old, right? But I don't know how it works, and I'm more than happy to use it. So why do I need to know how God works and what God is and where God is and whatever? So I let go of the definition completely. There is a God, and I'm not it. And so from there, it just took off. My spiritual life began to grow, you know, exponentially. And bless you. And what I realized was I would come to the meetings and you would share. Oh, well, thank you for sharing.
See, I heard you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for everybody who came up and shared. And for those of you who didn't come up and share, thank you for being here and smiling and being warm, adding to the energy of recovery here. Let's close with the Serenity Prayer. And why don't we do it in the we format this time? God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine. Be done.
Thank you, everybody.